Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay from the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriage between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-host, Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So good evening, everyone, and good evening, Misty. How are you?
Good evening, Bonnie. I'm doing pretty good. How are you today?
Doing good. Happy Easter to you.
Thank you. Thank you. I thank you very much for that. I've enjoyed the day of rest. Haven't done much else.
Did your family make dinner?
Day. No, I didn't. Dinner was out today. I told you, I rested today. No cooking today. It's called self-care.
I thought your mom would cook for you.
No, we all self-cared for each other today. Go out.
Good. And I heard it's hot in Florida, right?
Oh, we won't go there. Yes, it is. Very hot. And yes,
some of our support group members are telling us in the South how warm it was there at the beach today or other places.
I'm getting payback for all those winter days you had, my dear.
I guess you are.
I am.
So first of all, we would like to wish everybody, you know, happy holidays, whether it's Easter or Passover. This is the end of the Passover season also, and we're hoping to have our guest with us, Wayne Beeson. Wayne is the director of The Truth Wins Out, which is a really important organization in the gay community. And if Wayne doesn't get here, I will certainly talk to you about the organization, because Truth Wins Out serves a really important purpose. And I think that many of us have watched over the years on how I call it the ex-gay movement. These are, you know, religious groups try to tell people that they have a choice in being gay and they don't have to be gay. And, of course, when people come from a Christian religious background and they're looking for some kind of, you know, solution or answer to their problem of being gay, you know, they try to buy into this thinking. But I haven't found it to be very successful, and I find it really very insulting on a personal level. But how do you feel about it, Misty?
Well, I find it insult to injury on both sides because it gives the straight wife false hope. It gives the gay husband false hope, and everyone keeps trying harder and harder. And quite frankly, I just think it's just bad information, and it's given to people in a way that gives them many promises. And don't get me wrong, I certainly believe in God. I consider myself a Christian, so I'm not out there to bash people's religion. I'm just saying, you know, develop your own relationship with God and go from there, because, you know, you can figure out what's best for you and your partner. Because let me tell you, I lived many years thinking it was going to change. And even though I lived through a very abusive marriage, not including the gay issues, but even though my ex was very abusive, I will have to say, if he could have changed who he was, he would have. And it's devastating to both sides to buy into that. It's devastating.
Yeah, I think that every man you would talk to who married a woman would, almost every man, I can't imagine very many wouldn't say this, that if they had the option to be straight, they would certainly choose that. But being gay is not a choice. And I think that what the problem is that with some of these, you know, gay ex-gay movements, they call them ex-gay movements, that it's not so much that they even look at it now as, okay, you have a choice, but more that you have a choice whether you're going to act on it or not. Mm-hmm. So I think that becomes the issue. I think they acknowledge that people can be born differently or people can be gay, but that doesn't mean they have to actually act on it. And, you know, I think they put a different kind of twist on this whole thing, but I see so many people.
Even if they do put a different twist on it, it's still a bad situation to remain in. I mean, it's saying, okay, so both of you settle for less than what you should. It just sends
right.
a bad message.
Why does somebody have to be who he's not, you know, because of people's religious beliefs? And I see so many of these, you know, religious Christian gays really suffer, you know,
mm-hmm.
because of rejection by their family, by pressure from their community. And that's why they marry us to start with, you know, is because they really are hoping they can be husbands to us.
Absolutely.
And some gay men can definitely perform heterosexual sex for a while. Some can do it more often than others and longer than others. There's no roadmap on this, you know, journey at all. You know, everything is different. You know, you can never tell what date Yen's going to have to start acting on it, when he's going to start feeling it. You know, there are no roadmaps to gay. You just have to realize that every situation is different, but it all ends up being the same.
Mm-hmm.
But this just prolongs the agony as far as accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, we're hoping that Wayne will be joining us shortly. And we'll discuss that further. If you have any questions or you would like to call into our show, please take down our number, because we'd be happy to listen to your comments or answer any of your questions. And our number here is 1-646 is the area code, 716-4893. I'll read that back to you. 1-646-716-4893. And we'll be happy to talk to you about any of your questions that you might have. Now, one thing I wanted to put out to our listeners, that, you know, please feel free to email me at my email at bondk@aol.com. And I was telling some of our support group members tonight that I have, you know, on my website, gayhusbands.com, you know, I just had it redone and redesigned. And when I go to gayhusbands.com, you know, one of the options right after the homepage is the checklist, because I think it's really important to give women good information on what to look for as far as signs or red flags that they may be missing. So
mm-hmm.
there is the checklist that I really expanded when I updated my website a few months ago. And I told them tonight, you know, when we were in our support chat, that I even added three more that will be on there shortly. So I wanted to talk a little bit about those, Misty, because you work with a lot of women and you've had some of these experiences too. So I'm going to read some of the things that are currently on there and then the ones that I added. But, like, here are the things on the checklist now: that there's a decline of sexual activity early in your marriage that never picks up again. He tries to convince you that all relationships have a decline in sex, even when you've only been together a few years. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that happens often. And that goes back to, you know, the younger the men are, usually, this is a rule of thumb, not always, they can perform heterosexual sex. It becomes harder and harder. I think
right. In the earlier years, I think they're able to do it, but as so many gay men have told me, as time progresses, they just can't do it anymore. You know, they look at, they love their wives like sisters, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
as people, but, you know, not sexual. They can't feel sexual attachment to them. All right, the next one is he's turned off by normal sexual activity and accuses you of being oversexed, aggressive, or a nymphomaniac when you have normal sexual needs. I think our women run into that a lot.
I would say upwards of 97% of my women that I work with will report that they've been told that.
Mm-hmm. How about his sexual performance is more mechanical than passionate, with a lack of satisfying foreplay. I think some men just have sex, you know, to perform it. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think that's as far as they can take it. I think it's very unnatural for them in some way, because I think it would be, and I try to put myself in that situation
mm-hmm.
to try to, you know, figure this out and look at it from different perspectives. I think it would be very unnatural for me to be to fall in love with a woman. So, and you know, just to do everything that a woman would want for herself, you know, if she was in love with another woman. So, I mean, I try to look at it from different perspectives, and that's how I try to explain to myself how my own past marriage was. It was so robotic. It was very mechanical. It was like, you know, I'm a therapist, so you learn a lot of things out of textbooks. So, you know, either you learn to be a good therapist or you apply everything that the textbook taught you, you know, and you do a textbook style, like give a mechanical answer, put everyone in one category, or assume everyone comes from one mold. That's not how it is. You know, you have to learn how to be good and learn how to address each person's individual style. And going back to a man and woman having sex, and when one partner is gay, it's just very robotical. It's just like they learn how to perform sex maybe from reading a textbook or something, so to speak. And I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm saying it's just not, you know, there's something missing. the whole thing.
Well, I think
that
you bring out a really good point, Misty, was a comparison, because we can love women as friends and not necessarily, or definitely not necessarily, have sexual attractions to them, and find that what they would be doing sexually definitely against, you know, what works for us, and even, you know, appalling in some cases or repulsive in some cases. Not that it's appalling to them, but, you know, as straight women, we may feel that way. Like, there are just some things that women do with each other that to them, I'm sure, are very beautiful, but to me, it would really not be working for me. Now, that's not to say you can't do it. If you had to do it, if, you know, if you had a gun to your head or, you know, whatever the case is, but it doesn't mean that you'd ever be looking forward to doing it.
Exactly.
So,
or enjoy,
you know,
it.
I think that's how the men are, too. You know, they can do it, some of them, with us for a while, but it doesn't mean that that's what they want to do. And from what I keep reading, most of them are fantasizing about men anyway when they're with us.
I think sex, when you're a gay man, you have sex with your straight wife, I think it's just something very unnatural for them, that they just robotically get through it. And I just don't think it feels, whereas if, you know, you have two straight people together having sex, I think it's more of a natural progression. If that makes
right.
sense.
You feel,
it's hard
the,
to put in
you feel the foreplay, you feel the passion building up, you feel the intensity, and it's more like something that two people really want to do instead of, you know, on an occasional feeling you have to do it. So the next one I said is that he erases the computer history on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And I think that when, you know, so many of our women tell us that their husbands are erasing their computer history. But another one I didn't add yet, but I will add it to this. I mean, if he refuses to give you his password.
That was exactly, you're reading my mind. I was exactly getting ready to add that to that, you know, because my ex did that. He would just be so mean about the password. I said, well, if you don't have anything to hide, why will you not share your password? Because he knew my password because I had an account where my password was always on. You know, you could just flip on my name on the, you know, on their internet provider service and get on my email. I didn't mind, but his wasn't like that.
Yeah,
so I
don't get
that. Very important one.
I mean, I don't know what rationale that men come up with, you know, for the reason of not sharing their password. You know, but what could be that personal or that private? If you're in a marriage where you trust each other and have built a life together and have that common bond, what do you have to hide? And I wouldn't just say that for gay men. I'd say that for any men, for straight men, too, who are having affairs on the computer.
Exactly.
Okay, so next I have, he erases the computer. Okay, you find pop-ups of gay pornography on the computer, and he claims they're not his. I think a lot of men have told this to their wives when they see gay porno popping up or gay advertisements. And the women get so upset, and they say, well, how did that happen? And they say, I don't know. You know, it's just junk mail. You know, I ordered something, and now they're sending me this. But I'm going to be honest with you, Misty. In all these years that I've been on the computer, I've never had gay porno pop up. Have you?
No. In the beginning years of AOL, when I had AOL, I did. However, that was also the years I was married. So I haven't had that happen.
Since your divorce.
Yeah. So.
Well, I guess that says it all.
All right.
Yeah. How about he spends excessive time texting people at irregular hours? What do you think about that one?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's and texts are so easy to send. They're so fast, and they're easy to erase. So if you're, That's a good sign. And also, and back to passwords, if your spouse or partner has a password-protected cell phone to where you can't get in, why are they hiding it from you?
Exactly.
You know, because they can also, you can also put the passwords on your phone, like, you know, when you kick it on to either dial or to send a text or read the text, it's the password-protected. So if you don't know your partner's or spouse's password, why do you not know that? What's the secret? Now, I can understand having passwords for a phone because, you know, if you lose your phone, it's a security thing. If you lose your phone, that should keep someone from making international calls or something to charge you or, you know, until you can at least get your phone replaced or cut off. So it, you know, it does serve a purpose, but you shouldn't be kept from that information as their partner.
Right, and thankfully today, you know, thanks to modern technology, women do have problems, you know, with not getting their passwords. They can always buy spyware, not only for the computer, but also for the telephone. I mean, the telephone was a little more costly, but at least, you know, he'll never know that you have it installed on there. You know, it's done very cleverly where nobody can trace it, and you can get a copy of every text he's sending out and every text he's getting in and every number he's calling and what time. So, you know, it's easier to be your own detective today, thankfully.
With
the technology. All right, so how about he starts to spend more time at the gym and works on changing his appearance. Now, I think that's a really big clue that a lot of women, you know, it happens for them. And here's the funny thing. You know, they're thrown off because, you know, they're saying, well, he's not going to a gay gym, he's going to a regular gym. But I've heard from gay men that if you want to pick up another gay man, go to a straight gym. That's where the better pickups are. And they explained to me the reason for that is because in a gay gym, people are just going there to exercise. They all know they're gay. But in a straight gym, men are looking to have pickups there. You know, that's their purpose in going. So I think that's a really big thing to, you know, think about that it shouldn't just be because, you know, oh, if he's not going to a gay gym, I don't have to worry.
Exactly. It
comes up something else coming up in a few minutes. But if he claims that he starts to feel trapped in the marriage and he won't explain why. So I know that was a very big thing for my ex-husband. He always said he felt trapped in the marriage and he couldn't explain to me what that meant. Just that he felt trapped, and like I was the one who was doing the trapping.
Yeah, like you were the one causing the, you were the trapper, you know. Yeah, it was in my mind.
Yeah, but I hear other women that use that same word, you know, for their husbands, what they tell them also. And then we have that. Here's another big one that happens to a lot of our women. They are told that they have, you know, their husbands had sexual abuse in his childhood or adolescence.
Yeah.
And I would like to just spend a few moments discussing that because it's really strange that, you know, I've spoken to a lot of men who I call gay. In other words, they're authentically gay. They don't have to, you know, become married to know they're gay, to, you know, a woman. You know, they always know they're gay. And when I tell them this, that, you know, women tell me that their husbands were abused, and they look at me, and I said, were you abused? And they look at me like I'm crazy, and they say no, but a lot of men use that as an excuse. And over the years, I have found so many men using that as an excuse. How about you?
Absolutely. And first of all, let me bring out that, you know, from the bottom of my heart, I hate to hear when someone's been abused in any way. Because, that's just, you know, in the field, in the profession that I work in, I see a lot of that because there's a lot of people that have gone through horrendous things. So from the bottom of my heart, I respect that, and I feel sorry for those people, and I wish them all the healing in the world. And I want to put that out there because I know you and I both feel that way about people that have been abused. However, when it comes to working with the population that you and I work with, a lot of times that's what the gay spouse will say to their straight wife, you know, that they can't perform sexually, or that's what's wrong with their relationship, their intimacy is because the gay person was abused as a child, molested, or going through some type of sexual trauma. And if they did, that's horrible. I'm not discounting that. But I still don't think that makes someone gay. Or, you know, I don't think it does, you know. I think they use that. I know so many women I work with, their husbands use that. I don't know if they use that as to...
I think
they,
it's a sympathy
possibly
winner.
They may even believe it themselves. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, sometimes people have such a strong feeling that they begin to believe in it themselves. So,
well, I think it's a good justification rather than just coming out and, you know, admitting, look, I screwed up, I'm gay, and I got married when I shouldn't have. You know, like they can now explain it away by saying, yes, I was abused as a child by an uncle, by a priest. You know, I hear it so often with these gay married men. And quite frankly, like I say, I've had a few of them who told me they said it, but it really wasn't true. Mm-hmm. So that made me think that maybe it's really not true. And then when I asked people who weren't married, you know, who are just living an authentic gay life, mm-hmm. they told me that it's definitely not true. Not to say
yeah.
that somebody couldn't have been abused, but, you know, that's not the reason why they become gay.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't even get that whole concept. If you were abused by someone, why would you become gay?
I don't understand the correlation between that of what, how they try to say that that's what makes them become gay. But then again, it may be easier for them because society puts such stigmatism on being gay even to this day, even though it's better than what it was 10, 15 years ago. Maybe it's
mm-hmm.
easier for them to say that's how they become that way as a victim rather than they were naturally born that way because, you know, society, all society doesn't accept that as truth. So,
well, I think also, Misty, it's really a sympathy deal. Like, this is something that your wife can forgive you for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not going to be able to forgive you for being gay and lying to her when you got married. But if you can explain it away that I really tried hard, but those terrible things that, you know, haunted me through my childhood of being molested made me this way, then, you know, some wives are actually much more sympathetic because they believe this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they say it's not his fault, you know, it's not my fault, I understand it now, he was molested and this turned him gay. Now, once again, I'm not quite sure how that works because I can't quite figure out that if you are molested, meaning that somebody really brutalizes you and makes you, you know, hurt, why would you want to do that when you're older?
I don't understand the connection between it either. And the gay friends that I have, they're, as you call, gay. They're okay with being gay. They're open with many people, you know, that they are gay, and they certainly haven't been married. And they all tell me, you know, I said, well, when did you know you were gay? Well, I always knew. I knew when, you know, especially when they started going through puberty, you know, my friends were liking girls, I was liking guys, you know. So I'm like you. I don't understand the connection between people saying that they were sexually abused and then they become gay. I don't understand that connection.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to turn anybody gay. I know there's what I call temporarily gay kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like when you're in prison and there's no women, there's only men around. But
mm-hmm.
I know men who will have sex with men, but when they leave that prison, they would never even think about it. And
mm-hmm.
they're not looking at it as being gay. They're just looking at it as a sexual act.
Right.
So, you know, when you're stuck for 20 years with no women around and you're a sexual person, I can see where that happens. Or when you have a, you know, power differential situation like a teacher and a student where somebody's mesmerized or a movie star or whatever the case is. You know, like, you know, we talked before about Anne Heche, who was going with Ellen DeGeneres, and she said that Ellen was the only woman she ever fell in love with. You know, her sexual orientation is straight. But, of course, when she lived with Ellen, you know, she was a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
But once that relationship was over, she went back, and now she's been involved only with men. So, you know, like somebody joked around on television that Anne Heche was Ellen gay. You know, I think that people can have an obsession with someone, and sometimes that obsession becomes twisted in your thinking or confusion, and it turns over from just an emotional attachment to a sexual one.
Mm-hmm.
Or once again, like where you have a teacher and a student. You know, I've seen those kind of relationships come about when you, you know, respect someone so much. And, you know, I've seen all kinds of weird things where it's not like a permanent thing, it's just a sexual act.
Mm-hmm.
But those sexual acts don't last indefinitely, and men's basic sexual orientation was straight, and they weren't gay to start with. But, you know, they may have had experiences. But they certainly revert back to what their natural tendency is. They're not going to stay gay. So I do think there are some exceptions where people can become temporarily gay, but that temporarily, you know, moves on. But for the guys who marry women who are still having sex with women or who call themselves bisexual, you know, that's another one that's a real trip up for me. And that's another point on the list that, you know, the husband will say that he's bisexual. And, you know, to me, bisexuality is just the road to gay when you're not ready to acknowledge that you are gay. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I can see how some men think they are bisexual. I mean, because some of them are in such denial from being gay that even though they're having sex with other men, that, you know, they're still having sexual acts with their wife, you know, occasionally, just to keep in their own minds that they're not gay,
mm-hmm.
or so that their wife won't think they are. But I don't believe that people are bisexual by nature, because to me, bisexual means that you really do have a choice in the choice you're making, that you could be happy with a woman and you could be happy with a man. So if you have a woman, then be happy with her. Why are you looking for a man?
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's the way I feel about bisexuality. I think a lot of people use it as an excuse, and it makes women feel, you know, better when they hear that word bisexual. It gives them what I call false hope.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I can only love him enough and I can only meet his needs enough, then he won't need the men. And I used to think like that, too. You know, I'm embarrassed to admit that, but when I was in my marriage, I used to think, well, maybe he is bisexual because, you know, we still do have occasional sex. We had children. And I said, you know, and if he has to go out and have sex with a man, but maybe, you know, if I treat him better, if I give him more support, if I'm more loving to him, you know, you're competing with something that there's nothing to compete with. You can't win on that one. So I think that a lot of women get confused by that term bisexuality and linger in these marriages, trying even harder and harder every day, hoping that they're going to be able to win the love of their husband. And so many of these husbands tell me they really do love their wives. And you know what, Misty, I believe it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I really do believe it. But they love them like we were talking earlier. They love them like sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, you know, sweethearts, like your sister.
Right.
And a woman doesn't go into a marriage looking for a brother.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a marriage is not having a roommate or living with a brother, like you said. I mean, that's not what a marriage is. That's not how I define. Let me rephrase that. That's not how I define a marriage. So it didn't work for me. And it's, to me, it just, I was settling for something less than what I had potential to have out there. And my ex, he also claimed that he was bisexual. And, you know, I agree with your argument in saying that if he was bisexual, or if most of the men out there that marry women, you know, the straight women say that they are bisexual, you know, why is the marriage not working? The marriage should be working. Because
right.
They should be equally attracted to me as he would have been attracted to a male. So when it,
well, not
it
only
works.
That, but, you know, what is the real issue here? I think the issue with that is if a man is truly bisexual, why does he feel he can't be faithful to one person and have to be with someone
right.
else?
Right.
You know, if he's a truly bisexual, meaning that he can go either way, then find a mate either way, a man or a woman. But you should be able to, well, here's the funny thing, Misty. These guys who are bisexual, supposedly bisexual, nobody ever sees them looking for another woman.
I know.
They're always looking for men. So how does that make you bisexual?
I don't know. You tell me.
You're watching gay porno and gay chat rooms, you know, for gay bisexual men. But if you're truly bisexual, you'd be looking for women too, and they're not.
Yeah, I can't figure that one out either. When you figure that one out, let me know.
So I think that, you know, should be something that women have to understand. If they were truly bisexual, they'd be looking for other women as well.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? If they're looking for somebody else and you're not good enough, then get rid of them anyway.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't have to be someone's plan B. Whoever you're with, you should be plan A. That's who they want to be with all the time. You know, you don't have to settle for something less.
Right. You don't have to be even part of a plan. You have to be it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Another one is that he travels a lot for business and you can't track his activities. It seems like a lot of the women who we work with have husbands that travel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're out of town a lot. They're working, overworking for jobs a lot. And that gives them plenty of opportunity to meet with other men and have sex. So, I mean, that should definitely be a clue. If you can't get in touch with your husband, you don't know where he is when he's traveling. Another one is that he's having a midlife crisis and becomes moody and depressed. So, you know, a lot of men, you know, they all of a sudden decide during their, you know, 40s or 50s that this is the time in their life when they have to start, you know, taking it back and acting on who they are and being who they are. And so they have that midlife, you know, crisis that women think will pass because it's a midlife crisis. And, of course, straight men don't have midlife crises thinking that they want another man. So be really clear about that. You know, you can have a midlife crisis, but you're not going to be thinking about men to resolve it for you if you're a straight man.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing that I mentioned to you that I added also for the list having to do with moody and depressed and midlife is just in general. A lot of men haven't even reached the midlife point. So, but if they're telling you that they're depressed and they can't have sex with you because they claim their medications or their antidepressants, you know, suppress their sexual wants and desires, that I think is definitely a red flag, because we talk to so many women in our group, and so many of them said that, you know, yep, they hear this all the time from their husbands that they're depressed, and that's why they can't perform sex. So I think that even if you're straight and you know, you're depressed, you want to have sex to feel better, I would think. I had a depressed husband one time, a straight husband, and he always wanted to have sex. You know, it was a relief for him. So another one is that he admits to having a homosexual encounter in the past. Even if he said it happened once, I would say this is a problem. Also, he uses the word bisexual, as I told you. If he visits gay bars claiming he's only there to hang out with his gay friends, I really find that an issue, because I don't believe that straight men have that many gay friends that they're hanging out at gay bars. I'm not saying it doesn't happen once in your lifetime, but it's definitely not a hangout place for straight men. Straight men feel really overwhelmed going into a gay bar.
Yeah.
You know, they feel uncomfortable, they feel unnatural, right?
The ones I know do.
Yes, I don't know too many straight men who will ever tell me that they're comfortable going into a gay bar, even if they have gay friends. And if they have that many gay friends, then that has to be a sign also. So straight men, you know, it's one thing if you grow up with somebody or you're working with somebody who's gay, but other than that, straight men do not gravitate towards gay men. They're very uncomfortable with it.
I
agree. Also, he watches porno movies, and I said with gay male scenes, but, you know, I would just like to expand on that a little bit, that it's true that most gay men get really turned on by gay porn. But as I think I mentioned later on in this, you know, checklist, that they also get turned on by straight porn. And that's what really throws off a lot of women, is that when you have a husband who's gay, a lot of times he's watching straight porn and you're thinking to yourself, oh, he's not gay. But the truth of the matter is, I've had gay men tell me they prefer watching straight porn because they like the men in there and they fantasize that they're the women, and that's what gets them turned on. So don't let that throw you off. You have other suspicions for other reasons, and that's what your husband's doing. Also, he makes continual homophobic comments, or he makes too many gay comments in conversation. Was your husband like that, Misty? Was he homophobic?
Yes, he would make some comments. But he wasn't, he didn't, you know, not to the extreme of a lot of the women that I work with. So, I mean, he was sort of in the middle of the road with that. He wasn't extreme in that.
Yeah, see, mine was, mine was kind of not homophobic that way, but he would make fun of gay people. You know, he would say, oh, look how swishy he is, or look how he sashays, you know.
Yeah, yeah. My ex would do that, but he wouldn't do it excessively. I mean, he wouldn't do it that much. So, you know, a lot of the women I work with, I mean, their husbands would do it what I would consider excessively. So it wasn't that my ex did it excessively. It was that there were tones of that there.
And I think we've discussed before that when gay men do that, you know, it's a form of homophobia or else trying to throw you off track, that, you know, they feel that if they say bad things about gays or make fun of them, that you're not going to think they're gay. But a lot of times it's really because they do feel a sense of self-hatred when they see people who are stereotypically gay, because they don't identify with them. You know, they don't identify with the, you know, feminine, swishy person that you see on television, who everybody loves, who's everybody's uncle. You know, we talk sometimes about the show Bewitched, where you had Uncle Arthur, who, you know, Paul Lynde was gay. And, you know, people identify gay movie people, you know, and gay movie people are certainly something that people watch more so than anything else or on television. And then, you know, they make a connection that this is what gay is. And I think that for men who really don't want to deal with their homosexuality, they feel this sense of, you know, self-hatred when they see these kinds of people who, you know, are the stereotypical gay people. Do you feel that way?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I think you're correct in saying that. I mean, you look at all the stereotypes that Hollywood puts out there, everyone doesn't fit into that, you know, and it's, I don't know, it's just not fair. I don't think the stereotypes are fair to gay people in general, you know, it's just my opinion.
Right, and, you know, not only that, but it really throws people off track.
Absolutely.
Women.
And I think it throws, and, you know, it throws, and you know, you've talked about this before, it throws someone off that, you know, it throws a gay person off as well sometimes. You know, the gay men I've talked to, you know, I just didn't, they would say I just didn't identify with being that person. It wasn't who I was, you know. So.
I know. I think it's very misleading to everybody, but.
I do too.
All right. And also that, besides the comments, let's see what else I said here. His ego appears to be boosted by compliments from gay men. Like, I've had gay guys tell me that when a guy tells you that you look really good or whatever the case is, you know it must be true because they're men. Well, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't feel that complimented. You know, if a woman who was a lesbian was telling me how good I looked, I wouldn't feel like it's any better than a man telling me.
Yeah,
but,
I agree.
No. So, those are the ones I had down there. And today I also added on, besides the depression one, I added on that if you find any kind of sexual enhancement in your house, or that your husband has hidden in his briefcase or in his car, like a lot of women find it, like Viagra or Cialis, and you know there's nothing going on with you at home, then you have to realize that he's using it for somebody else. And, you know, that's certainly, definitely, you have to, you know, be able to deal with that, but that's your reality, where to start digging. And also, another one that I wrote about a little bit in my last newsletter was that if your husband wants you to do sexual acts with you that you're not comfortable with, in other words, using male sexual toys on him, and I have a lot of women who write to me about that because they feel bad because they don't feel they're able to do it, or they're not savvy enough for it, or it turns them off, and, you know, their husbands tell them, well, every man wants this, and, you know, it's no big deal, and just, you know, they want the women to use strap-ons or other kinds of sex toys on them, saying that it really stimulates your prostate, you know, when you do this kind of sex. And I tell women that's ridiculous. I mean, you shouldn't have to do anything you're uncomfortable for, you know, with your husband. That just doesn't feel right to you. Do you agree with that?
I agree that you shouldn't do anything that makes you feel uncomfortable. It should be, when it comes to sex, it should be mutually, I mean, it should be consenting from both people. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Both people should feel happy about what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it
exactly.
should be a turn on and not a turn off.
Right.
Yeah, the problem is that a lot of women don't have a lot of sexual experience, you know, before they get married. So they don't have anything really to compare this to.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to convince them that they're the problem, not their husbands.
Right.
That, you know, everybody does this, or you're just square, or you're not, you know, you're not sexy enough, or you're just not sexual enough, and that's why I'm looking for other people. You know, they'll come up with a million excuses, none of which I think have any validity at all.
Right.
And I tell women that if it doesn't feel right to you, or it's something that you're not comfortable doing, don't do it.
Right. I agree with that.
So I put that on for the list also. So I wanted to tell our listeners that if you have any more red flags that you would like to send me that I can add to the checklist, please do at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to include that. So, Misty, I wanted to talk a little bit today because it is Easter, and for a few minutes, you know, you are the best at grief counseling. You know, a lot of women on holidays just feel so strung out and depressed, especially in the early years of, you know, being split up from their husbands. So could you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. The best way to talk about that, I think, is provide a little bit of the education so people can understand. I call it my grief education. And holidays are notorious to be rough. In any type of grief situation, whether you're divorced, separated, learning that your husband is gay, or, you know, whatever type of grief situation where there's a loss involved. And the reason being the holidays are so rough and just so tough, I mean, holidays can be paralyzing, meaning you can just wrap yourself up and stay in the bed all day for a day up to a week. They can be so paralyzing because a lot of times in our culture and even in different cultures, holidays involve families coming together, involve food, gift exchange, seeing people that maybe you've not seen in a while, and just everyone comes together for these events. And naturally, there's oftentimes a lot of picture taking, and there's just a lot of memories made, And when you go through life transitions, for example, learning that you have a gay husband and you're moving towards divorce, and you are divorced, and you face these holidays alone, especially if your children are older, out of the nest, you know, you may be spending the holiday alone. That's not easy, you know, because you're going to go back and you're going to think, oh, my goodness, I've not moved forward. I haven't healed. You know, I've worked so hard towards helping myself. Why am I depressed on a holiday? Well, it's natural to be depressed on a holiday. I don't care how much work you've done, how much self-care you've done, how much new growth you've made. It's natural. You are going to feel a grief and a loss during those holidays because, you know, you miss the family functions. You're missing what was, and that's okay. It's natural. It's natural. And, you know, every day is not going to be a happy day. Every day is not. And when that happens, you know, just honor your grief. Honor that it's there. Let your body have some rest. Take care of your body. Practice really, really good self-care. And make sure you don't isolate yourself for an extended period of time, meaning if today was really bad on you, it being an Easter holiday, maybe you spent it alone, or maybe you spent it with someone you usually don't spend it with. You know, make some plans this week to do something fun. Don't wait a month. Don't wait 2 months. Take the initiative. Be proactive in your growth and your healing. Plan something fun this week, whether it be a lunch date with a friend that makes you laugh, whether it be going to the movies with some friends that make you laugh, whatever it is, make sure you bring something that has some type of joy in it because you need some balance for those days that are down and out. You need to balance that out. And I'm not saying it's not natural to grieve. It is. But you also have to have balance. Balance is the key to healing. You know, once you balance that grief out and do something a little bit of fun, I mean, you're going to feel better. It's going to raise your natural feel-good chemicals, like your endorphins and things like that. And it's going to help you. It's going to be therapeutic. So, yeah.
I know that a few of our women were saying that, you know, they feel down for several reasons, Misty, and I'd like for you to address this as part of the grieving and healing. You know, I call it GHR, gay husband recovery.
Mm-hmm.
That all of us have to go through, and it's recovery like any other kind of recovery after any kind of trauma or loss or when somebody dies or when a marriage is over. And I know that everybody who loses a mate or loses a marriage, everybody goes through all kinds of emotional things. It's just that when you have a gay husband, you have a whole set of additional problems. You have the normal divorce problems and things to struggle through, plus a whole other list of issues because you have a gay husband. But my point is that, you know, there is a period of time and, you know, there are different stages of it. In fact, in the new book I have coming out with my gay male peer partner, Doug Dittmer, that's coming out next month, or it's coming out in June, called Over the Cliff, you know, part of the book is, you know, Woman's Guide to Recovery, you know, through the grieving period, based on, like, the format that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote about, but adapted for us as women. You know, we're going through ending a marriage to a gay man. And one of the things is that, you know, you can go through these stages and revisit these stages just when you think you're moving ahead. You can be taking two steps forward and two steps back the next day because there's still so many issues to deal with. And, you know, especially around the holidays, a lot of us see our husbands, you know, taking off in their new lives and they seem really happy and they meet people. They're having relationships, and we're left holding the bag with all the things that, you know, all of a sudden our life is snatched away from us. And, you know, we have to make all these adjustments, and a lot of us have kids, and a lot of us have other responsibilities. And it seems like the husbands are out having a great time, and, you know, it makes you feel, like, even worse. And I think that's a very normal feeling that all women should understand, that if you're feeling that way, that's very normal, and especially around the holiday times.
Mhm.
Do you find that to be true, that women are worse off during holidays?
Absolutely. Holidays exacerbate and make worse any feelings of grief you have, because you associate those holidays with those family gatherings, those traditions. And you also, it brings up those feelings, and we talk about a lot of this in our, you know, recovery process for the straight wife, and that you not only grieve what was, you grieve what could have been and what should have been. That's a huge one that straight wives really grieve. So that brings out all those thoughts on the holidays, too. Well, you know, this year should have been our 20th wedding anniversary, our 30th wedding anniversary, you grieve all those things, and you grieve like, well, you know, when our children have grandchildren, we should be spending Christmas or Hanukkah together, these different things. So you grieve all those things, and holidays really bring that about, and it's natural to do that. So be gentle to yourself. You're going to grieve those things. Grieving is a very natural process. It's part of life. It's not easy, but it's part of life, and it's something that you have to honor. And don't go into a tailspin thinking, oh my God, I'm reverting, I'm going backwards, I'm doing terrible, I'm unraveling at the seams. No, that's not what it means. You know, if you've sunk down so far that you feel like you're unraveling from the seams, absolutely, you know, you're going to have to seek some professional help. But if a day or so goes by and you think, okay, well, I don't feel as bad as I did yesterday, and I don't feel paralyzed by this grief. You know, just realize it's part of the process. Now, if you start having feelings of suicidal, you know, you have suicidal ideations, like you're going to hurt yourself or harm someone else, you have to get help immediately. That's nothing to mess around with. I mean, you don't wait a day or two to see if you're feeling better. That's a crisis type situation. You go to your local emergency room, like right now, to be evaluated. But, you know, your normal phases of grief, you're going to be depressed. No one can tell us that, you know, once you make some healing and recovery, that you're not going to have moments of depression. I have women that I have that have clearly moved through this healing process at a wonderful speed because they have gotten support from me and from other people, and then they'll call me back a year or so later and say, hey, I need a follow-up. And they feel guilty about needing a follow-up, and I say, no, don't feel guilty. This is a natural part of the process, and, you know, we explain the process, and then we go through we find solutions for what they're particularly dealing with at that moment. And that is part of the grieving process. It doesn't end in a year. It doesn't end in 2 years. I can't tell you when it will end because you can't put a time limit on grief. And with grief, there's always waves of grief, meaning holidays can bring about a wave of grief. It's just like it just washes all over you like it's all new again, and you feel those emotions. But the good thing about a wave of grief versus being in the depths and in the trenches of going through the grieving process is there's a big difference in wave of grief and, like I said, going through the trenches of working through that grief, like as soon as you find out your husband's gay. The difference is when you go through a wave in just a matter of a day or just even a matter, sometimes a matter of a few hours, there's less intensity. You're going to revisit all those stages. Don't expect because you feel like you went through the anger or the denial that you're finished with that stage. I'm here to tell you you're not. It's a cycle, and it can go in, and it moves in all directions, and they can go back and forth. You will revisit stages. Expect it. But when you revisit those stages, they should have less intensity. That's how you can tell you've grown and you've experienced some healing and growth. They should not have the intensity. Mm-hmm. And even if it feels like they, at that moment, they have the intensity, they should fade much faster. Like, meaning you're not going to re-experience something for a month at the intensity you did when you first found out. I mean, it should be much shorter, and it's just not going to last as long. That's how you can really tell you've grown. And I encourage women, especially with these grief-related issues, keep a journal. And when you have a bad day and you experience a wave of grief, if you keep a journal and you date those entries, you can go back and it can remind you how far you've come That's why journals are so important. Sometimes we need those reminders of how far we've come, because when you're in a wave of grief, you forget. You forget all the accomplishments you've made. It's natural to forget that, and it's natural to come down on yourself. So if that happens, keep your journal handy and pull it out and say, you know, I'm just going to see where I was at a year ago, see where I was at 2 years ago. You know, you're going to see, you should see a lot of improvement.
I think that's all good advice. And, you know, I just want to let women know that in your early days of gay husband recovery, especially in the first year, every holiday is like a knife in the heart. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, just expect to feel that way and prepare yourself mentally that I know I'm going to have a bad day. What kinds of things can I do to protect myself from doing that? And I think I was mentioning on our chat room earlier, Misty, that, you know, people grieve for all different things, and holidays, like you said, is a time, no matter who you're grieving for, you know, I lost both of my children, you know, within the last few years, and, you know, my life could never be the same, and the holidays just really intensify those feelings, because, you know, it reminds you of all the family holidays you had, how you're missing your children, how other people are spending it with their families. And, you know, there's people who are grieving for all different reasons, and the holidays just seem to be a really painful time. But I can attest to the fact that they're a lot less painful now than they used to be in the early years.
Right.
And, you know, in time, you know, time is a great healer. And I think that people have to understand that. That there's no quick fix. Everything is a matter of just going through the time, you know, just trying to make new positive things for yourself. Looking to surround yourself with positive people, people who mean something to you in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, finding new activities to do, something that you can do that you always wanted to do, but felt held back from doing. I mean, there's all different ways to work on the healing process.
Absolutely.
But it just takes time. There is no quick fix. And even when you think you're moving ahead really quickly, it's just amazing to me that, you know, when women get so disappointed in themselves, because here they thought they were all recovered, and they're not.
Right.
And we both tell them that this just doesn't happen as an overnight, you know, fix.
Exactly. People expect it to happen overnight, and they don't expect it to be natural to re-experience one of those stages of grief. Well, I'm here to tell you, it is natural. And what happens is you don't get over grief. I hate that term. Oh, you'll get over it. You'll get over the loss. No, you don't get over it. What happens is, and I think a more natural way to explain it is, things will soften. Things should soften for you. That doesn't mean you're going to get over it. So if someone's trying to give you advice, oh, you'll get over it. You know, just realize that maybe they're not going to experience grief the way you do, because that's not natural to tell someone just to get over it. You know, it doesn't happen that way. It will soften. Over time, if you take care of yourself and you don't get stuck in grief, then you can't get stuck. If you get stuck, that's a whole different story. You really need professional help to pull yourself out of the depth of that depression. But, you know, grief should soften over time. You should notice, like, you know, a year out, well, you know, I don't feel as bad this holiday did as maybe last holiday, or where I can, you know, go to the movies by myself, or I can, you know, make it through a holiday without crying, or I can, you know, you can do these milestones that maybe you're not noticing. So that's why I say always set those accomplishments down. But if you accomplish something, write it down in a journal so you can see it. So if you need it, you can pull it out and look at that. And always, another important thing to do with the holidays is make a plan. I don't care what holiday it is, because we were just talking about this in the chat room a little bit earlier. Make a plan. Like one of our ladies said, you know, Easter sort of just snuck up on her. And, you know, because maybe she didn't think, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, but maybe she didn't expect Easter to be so bad. But it turned out to be sad for her. So, you know, always holidays, always make a plan, whether it be, you know, if you don't want to cook dinner, or, you know, meet up with some other single people, you know, and maybe your church or an organization you belong to or whatever it is, you know, to go out for dinner or
go out
meet everyone at a movie.
Something that'll distract you.
Absolutely. Because you're going to have contact with other people. That is just paramount in healing. You need contact with other people. Don't expect to heal if you're going to continue to isolate yourself. Now, some people like to isolate to heal. Now, if you fall in that category, I'm not talking about you. But, you know, most people need that human contact to heal. So don't pull yourself away. It's all about finding that balance and making a plan. Always make a plan for a holiday. Just go ahead and do it. You know, because if you make a plan, you're more apt to follow through if you involve someone else and not back out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying knock yourself out and prepare a 20-course meal. Don't do that. I'm saying go out and do something fun. You know, if you want to make a small meal or have a potluck. If you want it to be surrounded by a meal, have a potluck. Don't be the one that prepares everything. Ask for help and come in and bring friends and, you know, and enjoy the evening or the day.
Maybe go and cook something for me, Miss Dan, send it here.
Absolutely. I love to cook. That's one of my favorite things to do.
I think that would be really nice if you don't mind doing that.
Okay,
well, I just want to mention to our listeners, I'm sorry that Wayne didn't join us tonight, but, you know, sometimes he's involved with so many political things that he gets sidetracked, but I'm sure he'll appear with us again. I want to mention in 2 weeks we have a really important show also where we have an author, Dr. Lauren Olson. He wrote a book called Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight, A Psychiatrist's Own Story. And I'll read you a little bit about the book. It says, Dr. Lauren Olson has frequently been asked two questions. How could you not know that you were gay until the age of 40? Wasn't your marriage just a sham to protect yourself at your wife's expense? And finally out, Dr. Olson vigorously answers both questions by telling the inspiring story of his evolving sexuality, into which he intelligently weaves psychological concepts in gay history. This book is a powerful exploration of human sexuality, particularly the sexuality of mature men who, like Dr. Olson, live in a large part of their lives as straight men, sometimes long after becoming aware of their same-sex attractions. And so he's going to be our guest, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of questions for him. And once again, if you want to check him out, his book is called Finally Out, let me see the exact name. So you can check it out on Amazon. Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. So I think that'll be interesting because I think the more that men tell their stories, you know, the more understanding that women have. Here it says that Dr. Olson is a gay psychiatrist who came out at 40. A father and grandfather, he is also a Distinguished Life Fellow at the American Psychiatric Association and a recipient of the Exemplary Psychiatrist Award from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. He has presented findings from his research on mature gay men at the World Congress of Psychiatry in Prague. In 2009, Dr. Olson legally married Doug Mortimer, his partner of 24 years. They live on a farm in Iowa where they produce grass-fed beef from their herd of belted Galloway cattle. Well, that sounds pretty boring to me, but that's me. I don't think I'd want to live on a farm feeding cattle. What about you?
I could live in the wide open spaces, but I don't want the work of a farm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about grass-fed beef, but once again, maybe it tastes good. I just don't know if I'd want to do it for a living. I guess he gave up the psychiatry. But it will be interesting to see the stages that he went through. And,
yeah.
You know, and as a psychiatrist, how he can, you know, talk about it now. It would be more interesting, I think, to see if he's willing to have his wife talk to us sometime, because I always like to hear the other side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully we'll be able to hear that at some point. So anyway, Misty, we're going to say goodnight to all of our listeners, and thank you for joining us for the last hour. And we'll be back here again next week with some interesting information, as always. And thank you so much for listening in, because not everybody listens, of course, when the show goes on, but they listen throughout the week. And we appreciate the fact that we have thousands of listeners who are counting on this show to help them feel better about their situation. So we want to say happy holidays to everybody. And what else, Misty? Any other final words?
Good night and love to all.
Okay. Well, good night to all of you. And Misty, good night to you.
Good night to you, Bonnie. Good night.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.